This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Grand jury in the Russia probe. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, who's filling in for Jennifer Koshenka on this Friday, August 4th. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Special counsel Robert Mueller has impaneled a grand jury in Washington, D.C. as part of his inquiry into Russian election interference.
In another blow to Democrats, the governor of West Virginia announces he's changing parties. Hear what he said during a rally with President Trump.
A Massachusetts woman who repeatedly encouraged her boyfriend to kill himself when they were teenagers will spend 15 months in jail on a manslaughter charge.
And on the tech front, warehouse workers finding common ground with robots.
Robots are certainly on the horizon, but much of the work is still done by humans pulling carts through aisles, picking objects off shelves. It's not as automated as you would think, although the trend is moving towards there.
Wall Street Journal reporter Jennifer Smith on where robots can be a complement, not a replacement, for warehouse employees. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that special counsel Robert Mueller has impaneled a grand jury to investigate Russia's interference in the 2016 elections. The panel in Washington, which began its work in recent weeks, signals that Mr. Mueller's inquiry will likely continue for months. Mr. Mueller is investigating Russia's efforts to influence the 2016 election and whether President Trump's campaign or associates colluded with the Kremlin as part of that effort. President Trump addressed the story during a rally in West Virginia last night.
There were no Russians in our campaign. There never were. We didn't win because of Russia. We won because of you. That I can tell you.
Moscow has denied seeking to influence the election, and the president has called the probe a witch hunt. Before Mr. Mueller became special counsel in May, federal prosecutors had been using at least one other grand jury to assist in their criminal investigation of Michael Flynn, a former national security advisor. Well, West Virginia Governor Jim Justice has announced that he's changing political parties again, ditching the Democrats and joining Republicans. He attended a rally last night with President Trump to make the announcement. Mr. Justice, a billionaire businessman with interests in coal and agriculture, won election in November as a Democrat in his first attempt at political office.
Tomorrow, I will be changing my registration to Republican.
Until 2015, he'd been a registered Republican, then switched. Mr. Trump, who won West Virginia by 42 percentage points over Democrat Hillary Clinton, campaigned on a promise to bring back coal jobs, an important industry in that state. Governor Justice told the crowd he had met with the president twice at the White House in the past several weeks to present ideas on coal and manufacturing. Well, President Trump, as you know, has teed up another campaign promise, publicly backing a Senate bill that would cut back on legal immigration while admitting more high-skilled migrants and fewer low-skilled ones. But Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman says this would collide with another Trump priority, raising economic growth beyond the lackluster 2% level of the last several years. He's here to discuss his story. Rick, set this up.
Yeah, economists really don't like this idea, mainly because it would reduce overall legal immigration to the United States. It would cut it from about 1 million people per year, which is what it is now, to about 500,000. Now, part of the idea with this bill, which is backed by two Republican senators, and Trump has come out and said, yeah, this is the immigration plan he favors. Part of the idea here is to focus on getting more highly skilled immigrants coming to the United States, and that's in general a good idea. At the same time, they would sharply cut back on the number of lower skilled immigrants coming to the United States. And economists say that's not a good idea. And the reason is we need an expanding labor force in order to have stronger economic growth. You really cannot have stronger growth if your labor force is not growing. And the labor force, without immigration, the U.S. labor force is not growing. I mean, we have an aging population. We're seeing the mass retirement of the baby boomers. And we really don't have enough young native-born Americans to replace the retiring workers on a one-for-one basis. You actually want to replace them on more than a one-to-one basis, because the more people you have working, well, the more people you have earning money, spending money, buying stuff. You have greater demand for things that companies produce. When you have greater demand, you have more jobs. So that is how you have an economy growing at a nice clip, like 3% or even higher. That was the case in the 1980s, 1990s, and 1990s. Strong population growth, including robust immigration, was part of the story back then that pushed our growth rates high, and we're not in that situation anymore. So if you cut back immigration, you cut back economic growth and everything that comes with it.
I see that at least the way I see it, that this is just a way to keep people from coming here and immediately jumping on like the welfare benefits gravy train. Are there the savings there that are proposed, this billions in savings?
Some people think that immigrants come here mainly because they just want to get welfare benefits from the United States, but there are already rules that make it difficult just to come here for welfare benefits. And on top of that, the data shows that immigrants actually are more involved in the labor force than native-born Americans by a couple of percentage points, and the unemployment rate among immigrants is lower than it is for native-born Americans. So, to put that in plain English, that means immigrants are more willing to work, and they actually do work at higher rates than native-born Americans. And on top of that, they're also more likely to start businesses, partly because the mere act of migrating from your home country to someplace else, that is a risky thing to do in the first place. Entrepreneurs have to be people who are comfortable taking risks, and immigrants tend to be more comfortable taking risks than native-born Americans. There's just a ton of data that shows legal immigration has generally been a great thing for the U.S. economy, and curtailing that is going to lower our growth rates and our standard of living.
We're speaking with Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman about the impact of the new legal immigration proposal on the U.S. economy. Is it specific jobs that certain legal immigrants do that are taking jobs from native-born Americans? That's the issue here?
When you're talking about legal immigration, there are anecdotal instances where you can probably say, oh, look, some immigrants came and they were willing to work for less than these Americans, and so maybe they, you know, joined a construction crew, and some Americans, lost their jobs or ended up having to take lower pay. So anecdotally, that probably does happen here and there. But the solution to that, if you're trying to protect the jobs of the lowest skilled Americans, the solution to that is to help them get better skills. And that means improve education, improve job training, improve people's access to programs that will, give them more skills and give them a better likelihood of getting a raise and getting a better job. To say we're just going to fence off all these jobs, we're going to try to protect these people by making sure there's no competition for these jobs, well, that's just a false narrative, because even if you don't have new workers at the lower end, you have robots. And these are, by definition, lower skilled jobs are the ones easiest to automate. Some companies just outsource those jobs to other countries. So if you say, well, we're not going to have more workers here, no, companies aren't just going to necessarily say, okay, we'll just keep paying the same people to do the same jobs as we did 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah. Thanks, Rick. Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman. It's 15 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. You can also follow me directly on Twitter @GordonDeal. Glad you could spend some time with us. Welcome into a Friday. A young Massachusetts woman who sent text messages repeatedly encouraging her depressed boyfriend to kill himself has been ordered to spend 15 months in prison. Michelle Carter, who was 17 years old at the time, will remain free for the time being while her conviction is appealed. 3 years ago, 18-year-old Conrad Roy rigged up a generator to his pickup truck and poisoned himself with carbon monoxide. Ms. Carter had sent numerous text messages telling him to just do it and was on the cell phone with him during the suicide, at one point ordering him back into his truck when he had second thoughts. Kim Bosey, the young man's aunt, reacted on ABC News.
I felt good. I know that may seem odd, and I know, you know, it's a situation where there are no winners, but I felt like we won.
Ms. Carter's lawyer said there had never been a manslaughter case where words alone were found to be sufficient to have caused somebody's death. It's 20 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Gordon, in a sign that his inquiry is growing, not winding down, special counsel Robert Mueller has impaneled a grand jury to investigate Russia's interference in the 2016 election. The panel began its work in recent weeks. Republican and Democratic senators are pushing two pieces of legislation to block President Trump from firing Mueller. As Congress increasingly seeks to assert its authority on policy, members of Congress from both parties have expressed concern about the possibility. Trump addressed the grand jury news at a campaign-style rally last night in Huntington, West Virginia.
The Russia story is a total fabrication. It's just an excuse for the greatest loss in the history of American politics. That's all it is.
And with Trump at his side, West Virginia Governor Jim Justice announced he's joining the Republican Party.
Today, I'll tell you, as West Virginians, I can't help you anymore being a Democrat governor.
Justice was elected as a Democrat just last fall. A young woman who, as a teenager, encouraged her suicidal boyfriend to kill himself in dozens of text messages was sentenced to 15 months in jail for involuntary manslaughter. Michelle Carter was convicted in June by a Massachusetts judge. San Francisco police are on the hunt for a gunman who opened fire in a Mission District park crowded with parents, kids, and tourists on a warm summer day, wounding three people and sending panicky people running for safety. A witness says violence broke out after park regulars confronted about a half dozen men who were shouting and acting threateningly on a Dolores Park bridge.
I looked down to the bridge and saw a person running in a handgun in their hand.
One of the victims remains in critical condition. The power's back on Hatteras and Ocracoke Islands on North Carolina's Outer Banks after crews reconnected overhead cables and visitors and residents can start heading back at noon. The outage drove thousands of vacationers off the islands and forced others to cancel trips before they arrived. People magazine is calling him the world's most bitter royal. Prince Henrik of Denmark says he does not wish to be buried next to his wife, Queen Margaret of Denmark, because he's unhappy he was never acknowledged as her equal. He married Queen Margaret in 1967, and he was named the Queen's Prince Consort, but he has repeatedly said he would have liked to be named King Consort.
You married in, right? He married into the family, right?
He has been grumbling about this for 50 years.
Yeah, he needs to chill. He needs to just chill.
Do you tell an 83-year-old to grow up?
I think you can in this case.
Right.
I do think you can in this case. King, Prince, or Consort, or whatever he's called. Thank you, Rasa. 22 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Time now for a finance update, and it's brought to you by Lexington Hotels. Get away and save up to 30% at participating Lexington and Red Lion Hotels when you book by September 4th. Book your hotel stay and save today. Don't be so quick to ditch a rewards program that doesn't seem so rewarding. We collectively hold 3.8 billion memberships and loyalty programs, up from 3.3 billion just 2 years ago, but way too many of those memberships are inactive or have been abandoned. Here's what to do in that case from Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com. Kelly, what's up here?
It's a pretty common problem that people are not making the most of their rewards programs. Some data out from Colloquy found that it's about half of loyalty memberships in the country that are inactive, meaning nobody's using them. And in some cases, people are leaving these programs without ever having redeemed a point or a mile. Often that's because they feel like it's too slow to get to that point where they're earning a reward.
Wow. All right, so if that's the case, what do you need to consider here?
Well, the first thing you want to think about is, you know, what other benefits are you getting from the program? Sometimes just looking at the reward side of thing, as in, like, I'm earning enough points to get a free hotel night, you know, that can be short-sighted. There are oftentimes benefits that you get just for signing up for the program that can be pretty valuable in and of itself. Like, for hotels, for example, a lot of the big chains now will offer free Wi-Fi if you are a rewards member who's signing up. There can be other hoops there where you have to book in a particular way, but free Wi-Fi just in itself is, you know, easily worth, you know, $10 to $15 a day, yeah. In some cases even more than that.
So at least one of your experts here said there can be value in just signing up as even an occasional or one-time user.
Exactly, because that's in a lot of cases you're getting some sort of a welcome gift or award, might be extra coupons if you're talking about a retailer program. And then on the travel side, in a lot of cases, there are these perks that add up, you know, that even if you're never going to stay enough nights to get a free room, or it's going to take you, you know, 5 years to do it as an infrequent leisure traveler, you're still getting these little extras here and there every time you stay, and those can be pretty valuable as well.
All right, so how do you actually make these programs more rewarding for those ones that are just sitting around but doing nothing that you're not using?
Well, you want to be thinking about different ways that you can earn, transfer, and redeem those points. In a lot of cases now, we see both on the retail side and the travel side, that and credit cards as well, that there are different ways that you can, you know, earn points in one program, transfer them to another program, and even potentially redeem them in a third. And so you want to be looking at different ways to do that, where maybe your best bet isn't to, you know, really focus on racking up miles with one airline, but that you can pay attention to a particular credit card program where you're getting rewards for all your spending, and then you transfer those miles over to claim your free ticket. So think about it creatively like that.
We're speaking with Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com. She's also a certified financial planner. Her story is called What to Do When Your Rewards Program Isn't So Rewarding. Or do you say, too, you got to pay attention to those expiration dates?
Yes, if you are in a program where you know eventually you're going to get to that free airline ticket or hotel room or whatever the big reward is you're going for, just keep an eye out for how often those points need to be refreshed for you to keep them active and keep the account active.
Thanks, Kelly. Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. Glad you could be with us on this Friday, August 4. Gordon Deal with Rasa K, who's filling in for Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines: the special counsel impanels a grand jury into the Russia probe. West Virginia's governor will change to the Republican Party today. A Massachusetts woman gets 15 months in jail for using text messages to convince her boyfriend to kill himself. Sports: USA Today college football preseason poll has Alabama number one, followed by Ohio State, then Florida State at number three. Cowboys beat the Cardinals in the NFL season opener, and how some Indiana bikers helped a middle school kid being bullied. That story in about 20 minutes. It's time for a tech update, and it's brought to you by Dell. Need help finding the right Dell PCs with Intel Core processors for your business? Call 877-BUY-DELL to talk to a Dell small business tech advisor. In the battle of humans versus machine on the warehouse floor, some companies have found common ground. Instead of developing technology to completely replace manpower, these firms are designing robots meant to work alongside people. More from Wall Street Journal reporter Jennifer Smith. Jennifer, what have you found?
Well, there's a lot. There's been a lot of talk recently about the rise of robots, artificial intelligence, and sort of displacing the human workforce. And what's interesting is in the world of logistics and warehouse work, robots are certainly on the horizon, but much of the work is still done by humans pulling carts through aisles, picking objects off shelves. It's not as automated as you would think, although the trend is moving towards there. So what's happening here, there's a type of robot called a collaborative robot that's sort of small, and it's designed to kind of work with humans both in terms of it's safe, it's not going to bump into you, it doesn't have to be in a separate part of the warehouse, and it's being pitched as a way for warehouse operators to actually boost productivity. They can move more units out because these robots are helping workers sort of pick and pack orders more quickly.
What does this something like this actually do, or what does it look like, first of all?
A lot of them sort of look like these motorized step stools with touch screens and shelves, and they kind of zip up and down the aisles. You know, they're using sensors to learn how to navigate the warehouse. They see objects, they can maneuver around them, and they're also getting order information from warehouse management systems, at least some of them are, that can kind of tell them what's in an order, where to pick. So some robots scoot down the aisle and then position themselves in front of an area where an order and an item is located and kind of blink to alert a worker, hey, here it is. Wow. Pick it up. Put it on me.
We're speaking with reporter Jennifer Smith. She writes for the Wall Street Journal's Logistics Report, and she's written a piece entitled, A Robot Can Be a Warehouse Worker's Best Friend. The cost of these things, say, compared to overall, I don't know, like a manufacturing belt or something like that, or a warehouse belt.
They're both smaller and they're cheaper than some of the automation systems that have been used by big retailers or big distribution operations. These robots are sort of in the tens of thousands of dollars, as opposed to investing, you know, $500,000, $5 million, $10 million in a very complex sort of fixed infrastructure where you have conveyor belts going everywhere, or you have sort of big robots that sort of work on one side and can't sort of integrate with humans. These are kind of pitched as sort of a bolt-on way to do that. A single unit might cost between $30,000 and $40,000, although some are meant to operate in groups. Costs do add up when you add in software and licensing, but it's being pitched as a more affordable, accessible, and kind of quick-turn way to boost your productivity than, you know, completely outfitting your warehouse with a bunch of hard infrastructure.
Explain what the shipping company DHL is doing with what you call these swarming robots they're testing.
So DHL has been doing a lot of pilots with different technology, and so in this particular one, they're testing these robots made by a company called Locus Robotics, and these robots are designed to sort of work in groups to help pickers locate items quickly. The particular warehouse where they're being tested by DHL is one where they're moving out time-sensitive medical devices, you know, different implements that might be used in surgery, where you get an order in and you need to sort of try and get it out as quickly as possible. And so, you know, the swarming robots are, again, they're sort of telling people where to pick things. You put the order on the robot, you know, and then you move on to the next robot. So they kind of work in concert with groups of employees.
Wow. Kind of later in the story, you talk about a woman who said she just couldn't fit more workers into her warehouse and turned to robots for help. Explain that.
This was a logistics firm that runs warehouses for high-tech and industrial customers. And so they're located in the Bay Area. You know, space is tight, real estate costs are high. And she needed it to boost her output because of capacity constraints. She actually couldn't fit more workers in the building. And so she thought, well, I'll try these robots. And they can also, you know, they need to recharge, but they can work essentially around the clock. So she was really able to sort of get a boost there.
Thanks, Jennifer. Wall Street Journal reporter Jennifer Smith. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Welcome into Friday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, if you're getting tired of hearing about big city hijinks, we have two snapshots of small town life today, one American and one from north of the border. We start in Nova Scotia, where one of the biggest viral stories of the week puts the famous politeness of Canadians on full display. CTV News reported Wednesday that a TV producer was driving when he and his girlfriend spotted a big sign next to someone's mailbox with a simple request: bring back my wheelbarrow. Both of them laughed hysterically at the randomness of it, posted a photo of the sign to Facebook, and went on their merry way. 2 days later, while driving by again, they noticed a new sign, which again carried a simple message. Thank you for bringing back my wheelbarrow. They, of course, snapped a picture of the new sign and posted it to Facebook and Twitter, where they really gained traction since racking up over 70,000 likes and nearly 20,000 retweets.
Jeez.
Prompting some to proclaim the wheelbarrow caper to be the most Canadian mystery ever.
Okay.
And then folks, I guess, who lived around there even chimed in and said, we can confirm that this is real, and we can confirm that this is basically a snapshot of what life is like around here.
Wow.
In rural Nova Scotia.
Jeez. Well, you never know what's going to register sometimes on social media.
Yes.
Right? Just a couple of signs about a wheelbarrow on somebody's front lawn.
Yes. And
20,000 retweets.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, we want to know exactly, how this happened. Again, was the wheelbarrow just sort of left out there and somebody just absconded with it?
Jeez.
I'm guessing that's what it was. I'm guessing it wasn't somebody that the person knew, just a random wheelbarrow thief.
No,
who brought it back? I guess used it for what they needed it for, and then brought it back.
I bet I know what happens in a rural town like this.
Okay,
it's left outside, and somebody thinks I just need to borrow it.
Yeah,
and probably was planning to bring it back anyway. I doubt there was much thievery involved here.
Maybe there was nobody home. Maybe they even wanted to knock on the door or something. Nobody was home, so they brought it, used it, and brought it back.
That's what I'll go with.
And apparently, Gordon, the people in one tiny town in Iowa didn't get the memo when a special election was held this week. The election turned out to be special, but for the wrong reasons, since not one person showed up to vote. McIntyre, Iowa has 70 registered voters, none of whom thought it prudent to stop by and vote on two ballot measures about whether the terms of the mayor and council should be raised from 2 years to four. In fact, not even the poll workers voted on the election, as none of them actually live in McIntyre. The county's deputy auditor said that she's seen low turnouts over her 28 years in office, but this is definitely a first.
Well, I was looking on the map at McIntyre, Iowa.
Okay.
And I think I can understand why the 70 voters did not turn out to vote.
Okay.
Since they live near Minnesota, they went there to try to find something to do because there's nothing to do in McIntyre, Iowa.
Yeah, it's a little off the beaten path.
It's a little, it's got the
just a tad.
I believe it's the Wapsinicon River, which you've never heard of, runs through the southwest part of McIntyre, Iowa. But other than that, other than the...
So maybe they're out rafting.
Other than the Pinnacon Farm Partnership, there's really nothing else going on.
All right.
In fact, it looks like there are just a handful of streets. First Ave, 2nd, 3rd, 4th Street. Then you got Munson, Main, Wayne Street, Grace, and Wheeler. That's it.
Right, so you don't need GPS to navigate your way through town. Is that what you're saying?
No, that's right. So I think that's what happened. They went north to Minnesota just a few miles away to find something to do.
It's gone fishing.
Yeah. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. Rasa Kay is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, special counsel Robert Mueller has impaneled a grand jury in Washington to investigate allegations of Russia's interference in the 2016 elections. The panel's been at work for weeks, a sign that Mueller's inquiry into Russia's efforts to influence the election and whether it colluded with President Trump's campaign is ramping up. Trump was at a rally in Huntington, West Virginia last night, where he again called the Russia narrative a fabrication.
The reason why Democrats only talk about the totally made-up Russia story is because they have no message, no agenda, and no vision.
With Trump by his side last night, Governor Jim Justice of West Virginia announced he's switching allegiances to the GOP. He was elected as a Democrat last year, even as Trump carried the state by 42 points. Michelle Carter gets 15 months in a Massachusetts prison. The 20-year-old exchanged hundreds of text messages 3 years ago with then 18-year-old Conrad Roy, encouraging him to kill himself. He died of carbon monoxide poisoning. She was convicted in June of involuntary manslaughter. Her lawyer, Joseph Cataldo.
This is a tragedy. I have said from day one, it's a sad story. It's a tragedy of two individuals, an 18-year-old and a 17-year-old, who both had mental health issues.
Carter will remain free pending appeals. A Senate committee has approved legislation to suspend U.S. financial assistance to the Palestinian Authority until it ends what lawmakers call a longstanding practice of rewarding Palestinians who kill Americans and Israelis. The Republican-led Senate Foreign Relations Committee passed the measure, sponsored by Senators Lindsey Graham of South Carolina and the committee chairman, Tennessee Senator Bob Corker. Investigators from the National Transportation Safety Board are at a Minneapolis school to determine determine what caused an apparent natural gas explosion that killed two people and injured at least nine others. Wednesday's blast at Minnehaha Academy caused part of a school building to collapse. If you're driving a 1997 or 98 Honda Accord or Civic, you're at greater risk than owners of newer models to have your car stolen. They top the annual Hot Wheels report from the National Insurance Crime Bureau. More recent models have smart keys and theft prevention technology.
Very good. Thank you, Rasa. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. A group of more than 50 bikers in northeastern Indiana stepped in to help when they found out a local sixth grade student was having trouble with bullying. Fox News tells the story of DeKalb Middle School student Phil Mick. His mother, Tammy, was very concerned about her son's issues with bullying. She says it was so bad, he told her he contemplated suicide. She spoke with Brent Warfield of KDZ Motorcycle Sales and Service about it, and Mr. Warfield immediately stepped in to help. He's the director of United Motorcycle Enthusiasts and has been working to raise awareness about bullying and teen suicide, along with other charity rides. So he decided to organize a special ride for Phil on his first day of middle school. He posted the information on Facebook just a few days beforehand and got an incredible response. More than 50 bikers met with Phil and his family for breakfast before his first day of school. They prayed with Phil before the big escort. Mr. Warfield said the school was very welcoming of the idea, and Phil was very excited about a fresh new start. That'll do it for this hour. For Rasa Kay, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.